Desert Island Discs.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? I'm happy to welcome ashore onto our desert island this week a very famous visitor from the United States and one of the great names of jazz. He's probably excited more controversy and argument than any other figure in the world of popular music. It's Stan Kenton. Well, Stan, welcome ashore. Your records have preceded you to this desert island on quite a number of occasions.
Thank you, Roy.
Well, this tour of yours is drawing to a close now. It's not so much a tour as a triumphal progress, I gather, with people just about hanging from the rafters in every hall you play in. Is that so?
Well, right. It's been pretty exciting and a very warm thing.
You, of course, yours is the first American band to play here since 1934, isn't it?
That's what they tell me. I think Cab Calloway was the last of the American bands to be here, so it's been quite a responsibility to come over here for the first in such a long while.
Yes. This is a sort of trade agreement now. You're playing here, and our Ted Heath has gone over to the States, is that right?
Yes, he's now touring the States for his first visit. I guess it's about, it must be the same number of years since a British band has been to America.
Mm-hmm. And I hope this swap system is going to continue, is it?
Well, Roy, I have my fingers crossed, too, as well as a lot of other musicians. I hope so. I think Louis Armstrong now being here, and Freddie Randall in the States, at least that's the second step.
Good. Well, we're taking you away from the hurly-burly of the concert tour and dumping you on this desert island. Did you find it a very difficult job to choose just 8 records for your exile?
I find it very difficult because you've limited me a great deal, Roy, when you say I'm going to go to a desert island. I can take 8 recorded compositions with me and a little else, so this has been a very important thing, me picking this music that I'm going to have with me.
What's the first one you've got on the file there?
Well, for the first one, I think it's absolutely necessary that I have something by Bartok. And one of the most popular things of his is the Concerto for Orchestra. And I've chosen at the moment the rendition that is conducted by Edward Van Beynum.
Yes. Which part of the work would you like to hear?
Well, Roy, I'd be very happy to hear any section you'll allow me.
And let's go right back to the beginning. Tell us something about your family background. Were there any musicians in the family?
Well, none with the exception of my mother, Roy. She was a piano teacher, and she was teaching piano at the time I started studying.
Mm-hmm. When did you first have the idea that music was going to be your vocation?
Well, my mother exposed me to music when I was about 10 years old, but it was a very fast exposure. I would rather be outside playing. She tried again when I was 12 years old, but it seemed in vain. Finally, when I was about 14 years old, I suddenly became obsessed with the idea of wanting to learn how to play the piano, and I then started dreaming about making my life a professional life in music.
Mm-hmm. What were your first jobs?
Well, let's see, the very first job I had, I was about 16 years old. I had a job in the south side of Los Angeles, California, in a kind of a sandwich place, just a small eating place, playing piano, and my salary for the evening was 50 cents, and if I could satisfy some of the customers by playing some of their requests, the manager assured me that they would give me something.
Did they?
I think I came home with 50 cents.
Going back to those early days, playing piano, and I presume you went on to lots of other places after the sandwich bar.
Yes.
Was there any one musician that was an inspiration to you?
Well, at a very early age, I discovered that I was interested in jazz more than in classical music, and I met an older man in music, a piano player, that said, I think that you should be set in the right direction right now. He said, do not confuse yourself by listening to a lot of jazz music other than that of Louis Armstrong and Earl Hines. He says, Louis Armstrong, I think, is going to be the father of all jazz because he's the one that is doing the most genuine creative music. I started listening to Louis Armstrong, and for that reason, I think, Roy, on a desert island, I, like a lot of other jazz musicians, must have something there that represents an effort or an example of what the father of all jazz can do. That would be Louis Armstrong. And if it's all right with you, I'd like to pick his Sleepy Time Down South.
The pale moon shining on the fields below. The folks are crooning soft and low. You didn't tell me, boy, because I know, yes, when it's sleepy time down south.
When did you get the idea that you must have a band of your own, Stan?
Roy, I think that after I'd played around in Southern California, around Hollywood and Los Angeles for a number of years, working in clubs, the studios, and radio stations, there was such a hunger to play a certain kind of music that somehow the opportunity didn't present itself. So I decided that if I was going to be able to play that music, I'd best try to organize my own band. I think that was really the reason the band was organized.
Yeah. You started straight away to put your new ideas into operation with the band. You didn't just build a commercial band and then start to experiment slowly.
No, I had some ideas in the beginning days of the band. I felt that the saxophones weren't being used properly. I had another idea for the trombones and, of course, phrasings and so forth. I really had something that I thought was fresh at the time.
Well, now your band has gone through a number of phases, which are known as the growing pains, the progressive phase, the innovations phase, when you had the string section. Do you feel that you're now getting more or less to what you're searching for, or are you still just scratching the surface of what you're after?
Well, I don't know how deep we are into the surface, whether we're scratching it or not, but I know, Roy, that there are a lot of challenges in the future, and even though the band has been together for a long time, it seems like the future to me is just as important now as it was in the beginning days.
Yes. It's progress all the time. Of course, like all pioneers, you've had a lot of criticism from people who say that, your music isn't soothing music, which they seem to want all music to be.
Well, Roy, you know, I actually believe that some people believe music should be just a thing that's there if you want to listen to it, and if you don't want to listen to it, you don't have to pay any attention to it. But I know that music like ours, not only like ours, but there's a lot of music just like it in the classical world and contemporary modern world of the classical music scene. Some music you cannot disregard. It's too pointed and it is too strong. It demands too much of your attention. We in the musical world call that music more absolute music. It's music that you can't, it's not functional. You can't eat by it, and it's not good for atmosphere. It's music for music's sake.
Mm. Are you going to take any of your own records to the island?
Well, I'd like very much to take this next one with me to the desert island for one particular reason. That is this, that this is one of the outstanding things that we've done with a string section, and it somehow provokes a lot of fantasy, in as much as every time you listen to this composition, you can hear more. It's like a modern painting. On first hearing, you do not absorb it all, and I don't think that you ever can absorb it all because there's too much going on. I think it'd be very necessary that I have this composition with me because at times when I want to look deeper into my inner self and find something else, this is the music I would choose. It's a composition called The House of Strings.
That certainly isn't jazz music, Stan, as jazz isn't ordinarily understood, is it?
No, it isn't. There's no swinging drummer, and there's no improvised solo.
Over here, of course, you're just playing concert performances. Can you do that all the time in the States, or do you play for dancing as well?
No, Roy, we find in the States, and I believe it's pretty much the same throughout Great Britain, concerts are limited to seasons. We, for instance, in the States, have about 3 months of concerts a year. Then the rest of the time we spend in ballrooms playing dance music or in jazz clubs.
Yes. Do you have to play more commercially for dancing?
Well, it's a fact that if you played some of the jazz things we play in concerts for people to dance to in a ballroom, I'm sure there'd be some kind of a emotional collapse on the audience's part here, because after all, if you're going to dance to music, you have to be able to hear the beat, and it's got to be obvious, and a lot of people dance to a melody, so it has to be functional.
Yes. Of course, for your concerts, you do some very valuable work in commissioning works, especially written for you.
Oh, yes. We have really two libraries, Roy, one that we use in concerts and one we use in ballrooms.
Do you find now that the British fans are as knowledgeable about jazz as your fans in the States?
I would have to say definitely yes. That was one of the things that amazed me so much when we came to Great Britain. I felt that possibly there would be a little bit of a lag, but there isn't at all, Roy. They seem to know just exactly what has happened in the States as up till yesterday.
Good. Well, let's have another disc, then.
Well, you know, I think that it would be very necessary on my desert island if I took something of Duke Ellington's along, because I think of all the men that have led big bands in jazz, Duke possibly should be presented with the crown. He's certainly magnificent at creating moods, and here's one example. This, too, is like the composition ahead of it. This, each time you listen to it, you hear and feel something else. This is a composition of his from Black, Brown, and Beige. This is called The Blues.
Took a choo 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 fast as I could take a choo choo. I came a long, 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 long way to take you in my arms. And now it's your first move to prove that you've been true.
Duke Ellington's The Blues. When you finish your tour here, Stan, in a few days' time, what are your plans? You going back to the States?
No, not yet, Roy. We go to Europe. Our first concert over there is in Scandinavia, in Oslo. We'll be there for about an equal number of dates to those here in Great Britain. We have about 5 weeks of concerts, and then we return to New York.
Mm-hmm. It must be a very exhausting life, playing one-night stands from city to city.
Well, I don't think so, because you have to remember, Roy, all we do is play one-night stands and go from city to city, eat a bit here and sleep a bit there. I imagine that if we started saying, well, now we're in this wonderful country or this wonderful place, I wish we had time to go do this, and we start becoming disappointed and feeling a lot of self-pity, why, then I imagine we'd feel exhausted, but not under the circumstances.
You're a very relaxed man. I think that helps a lot.
Well, Roy, I've never been told that in my life before, so I'm going to cherish that remark very much. I'm glad I look that way, because there's certainly a lot of butterflies going on inside.
No sign of it. Well, what would you like to hear next?
Well, Roy, I've always said that I think that I have the smallest amount of sentimentality and nostalgia of any person I know. But here I am, in choosing these records from my desert island, here's something that I'm taking with me strictly for sentimental reasons. And I think when it comes to creating sentimental music, Frank Sinatra probably has no superior. And if you like, if you don't mind, I should say, I'd like to take his version of Nancy.
If I don't see her each day, I miss her. What a thrill each time I kiss her. Believe me, I've got a case on Nancy with a laughing face.
Roy, on a desert island, there will certainly be afternoons when I shall sit on the beach and look out across that water and dream and gaze, and I can think of no better music to do it by than, of course, Ebert's Ports of Call.
Yes. Which particular port?
Well, right now I'm looking toward Rome.
Stan, we come to the $64,000 question. What sort of castaway are you going to be on this island? Will you be able to look after yourself? Could you build a shelter to live in?
Well, let's see, Roy. There are no hotels on this desert island?
Nothing at all, just you.
And there are no restaurants?
Nothing.
Well, what does that mean? What do I have to do?
You have to build a hut.
Build a hut? Well, I suppose I'll have to build it out of anything I can find. I don't know how to build a hut, but I certainly know that I'll have to build one.
Yeah, you'd better. Can you fish or trap or anything of that sort?
No, I'm the world's worst fisherman. I've never been on a hunting trip, but I have to do both of those. Well, I want to live, Roy.
Yes.
So I better learn how.
Can you cook?
No, not at all. But if I have to live, if I have to cook to live, I'll say I'd better learn how to cook.
You'd better learn how to cook.
I'm going
to
be a pretty busy man these first weeks.
Disc number 7, what's that going to be?
Well, for disc number 7, I think it's absolutely necessary that I take with me something fresh and something new. Something that does not represent a lot of battle scars of a long career in music. I've chosen the voice of Danny Purchase to go along with me, a fellow here from Great Britain. I think he has one of the cleanest, freshest sounds on record. May I have his record of We All Need Love?
And after Danny Purchase comes number 8, and this is your last one, Stan. What have you chosen for your last one?
Well, I've chosen something that's got to be with me. This record I consider one of the masterpieces, and so does the commercial world of music consider it a money-making masterpiece. This is something that I'm sure that any time I felt a little low, I could play and I would gain a smile. This is Tennessee Ernie's 16 Tons.
I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal, and the star boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Well, there we are, Stan. There's your 8 records, for better or for worse. Now you've got one more choice to make for the desert island. That's your luxury object. You can take with you, as well as your records, one luxury. What would you like?
Well, let's see, Roy, you've made it obvious to me that I can't take a practical luxury, something that I could wear or use to keep myself alive.
Well, you could take something to wear if you want to.
I may take something to wear?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me see. I think if I could take something to wear, I'd take a pair of shoes. No, shoes wouldn't last a long time. They'd wear out fast. I'd get along without them at the beginning. I don't know. I don't have anything that I would take of sentimental value with me. I just somehow never become attached to any little pictures or items of... That would appeal to my sentimentality, but if you'll allow me a book, I'd appreciate
that,
Roy.
What book would you like?
Well, out of all the books that I've read, and I'm not trying to say I've read a lot of books because I'm a very bad literature connoisseur, I've read one book somehow that has excited me more than any of the others, and that is a book by H.L. Overstreet called The Mature Mind.
Mm-hmm. What's it about? What is it?
Well, it's a book that sort of takes away all the sham of life and gets right down to the bare facts. And I think that it is a book that I could read time and time again. And each time I would read it, I'd find something new and a different message.
Well, you'll have plenty of time on the island to think it all out.
Well, I think I'll take this book with me then.
Many thanks, Dan Kenneth, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Discs. And I hope we'll see you over here on many more visits with you and your band. And they'll all be as successful as this one.
Well, Roy, thank you very much.
Goodbye, everyone.
Let me say goodbye, too.